Hi everybody, this is September 14th. Welcome to the September NYSO Open Teleconference. My name is Nettie Lagasse. I'm the NYSO Associate Executive Director and very happy to be joined by all of you on this call today here to talk about KBART, the Knowledge Bases and Related Tools, with our two guests, Andre Rathemacher and Noah Levin. Before we get started, I just have a couple of descriptive ground rule sorts of things. So these are, I hope they are very informal talks. The first part will be a little discussion between me and our guests to talk about KBART in general. We are very happy to get questions from all of you. That's why we hope you joined us today to talk some KBART with us. Generally, questions, we do the discussion then questions after that, but if you have a burning question that fits in with the discussion, feel free to pop in and ask your question at any time. Otherwise, if you aren't asking a question or talking, please do mute your line on your end. That does help with the background noise or the overall experience for everyone. So. Muting lines is always a good thing. And so I'm recording the call. We will be posting this on our website for people who can't make it today. There will be a period at the end of the call where I will shut off the recording. So if for any reason there's something that you want to say or ask that you don't want to have on the recording, there will be time for that. We're very happy to provide that. And there will also be time at the end to talk about any questions about NYSO in general, not just KBART. So just to let you know what's coming. So with that, I think we can get started. So Andre and Noah, can we just give a little introduction? Introduce yourselves and say a little bit about yourself and how you what your role is with KBART. Andre, maybe first.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Andre Rathemacher. I'm the head of acquisitions at the University of Rhode Island Libraries, and I've been on the KBART Standing Committee for about 3 years now, and I'm one of the two co-chairs along with Noah. And in my role in the library, I manage e-resources, so I'm very interested in KBART as a tool to make my life easier and my job easier.
Great. Noah, just a few words.
Sure. So I'm Noah Levin. So I'm also the co-chair of the KBART Standing Committee along with Andre. I'm an independent professional, and I've been working with in the KBART group since, I don't know, 6 or 8 years ago. And truthfully, I've worked with various publishers for about roughly the last 20 years, working in the world of data feeds from trade or library. Certainly KBART was a natural fit for me.
Great, thanks. So, Andre, could you explain what is KBART?
Sure. As you mentioned in your introduction, KBART stands for Knowledge Bases and Related Tools, although we usually just affectionately call it KBART. And really, at the most basic level, it's a set of best practice recommendations for content providers like publishers to communicate to knowledge-based suppliers what e-journal and e-book content is in their products. And so right now, KBART covers serials and monographs. We'll talk later about how we're looking at expanding that. And so what the KBART recommended practice does is it specifies to content providers the file format, delivery mechanisms, and what fields to include in the file. So let's say you're a publisher and you sell 7 e-journal packages and 10 e-book packages. You would basically produce a KBART file for each of those packages and list what's in them. And one thing that we like to emphasize about KBART is it's very, very straightforward. It's not super high tech and complicated. It's just a text file. And the text file can be opened up in like a spreadsheet program, and anyone can look at it and immediately understand what's in it. So it's just basically fields like publication title, ISSN, ISBN, volumes, issues, and date information for journals, date of publications for books, the link to find the thing, and the publisher and whether or not it's open access, and a few additional fields like that. So it's a way that publishers can let knowledge bases know what's in their various products that they sell.
Great. Anything to add there, Noah?
No, that sounds perfect.
Good. So the next question is for you. How do libraries and providers use knowledge bases? Or what's a knowledge base?
So a knowledge base is often run by different library system vendors, such as EBSCO, Ex Libris, ProQuest, OCLC. And the way that works, to kind of take a step back and look at it, is, so what happens is a customer will purchase content from a publisher or a vendor. And so they'll purchase content, various books and journals. They'll be providing these packages, and you'll have these KBART lists. And in the KBART list, it'll basically have the content that's sold in that package. On the discovery side, so the library has a discovery service that they have subscribed to, and allows them to search through that content that they purchased. Allows their users to search through that and then access it to these links. So the knowledge base itself, what that is, that's run by often those discovery services. It can also be sometimes maintained by libraries or consortia, but often they're run by those discovery services. And they will use those that KBART file to know what's in the publisher's sellable packages. That way they know that they're the different libraries who subscribe to this stuff, what they should have access to and how to access to it, which is what Andre was saying with that kind of linking information and specifying individual titles and journals.
Cool. Andre, did Noah miss anything?
He didn't, but like one just real concrete example for the librarians out there. I mean, basically KBART helps your knowledge base. If your user is looking up a journal or an article, how do they know whether to link to it on, say, Elsevier Science Direct or Project Muse or EBSCOhost? Like which format does the library have it in? And that's what the KBART file will do. It when it feeds into the knowledge base and then it feeds into the library's discovery, your library user will only see the access that they have as opposed to all possible access. And that's how KBART really helps with discovery for individual libraries and their researchers.
Cool. So KBART automation is a pretty new thing on the KBART scene. Can you summarize what KBART automation is, Andre?
I'll take a brief stab at it, and then we'll definitely give time for Noah to weigh in, since he was actually on the KBART automation group that developed it. But I think the key distinction is that normal KBART, what we're mostly talking about here, the vendor, the content provider, will create a KBART file for what they sell. So I have journal package A or book package B, and that's what the KBART file corresponds to. With KBART automation, the content provider creates a KBART file for an individual subscriber, like a library. They often do this anyway. So librarians, when you log into your publisher admin system, you can often download your holdings in a KBART file that just corresponds to what you hold. So KBART automation says to the content provider, create a file for each individual library containing exactly what they have at any given moment. And then it automates the process by which the knowledge base can sort of reach out and grab that file on behalf of the library and load the holdings. And so, for example, just from my life, I've bought journal backfile packages before. And so, okay, now all of a sudden, in an instant, I own, 20 additional titles with different dates on them. And because of KBART automation, I don't have to go in and sort of find that exact package that I bought or go in and modify the dates of holdings on individual journals that I bought. All I have to do in my system is press a button, and within 5 minutes, my holdings are updated.
That's a pretty good summary. Anything you want to add there, Noah?
Sure. That's actually an excellent summary. So I'm probably just going to reiterate a couple of points that Andre already said. So, you know, KBART automation is like, what's the difference between regular KBART and KBART automation? And I like to tell people there's a certain level of magic with KBART automation. And of course, it's not real magic. It's just about automating the process. But it makes the librarian and the provider and the knowledge base's lives a lot easier. So as Andre was saying, so in the past with KBART, the way it works, I'm sorry, not past, it's present as well, is the publisher will post on their site a whole bunch of KBART packages, which is all their sellable packages. The knowledge base will then pick those files up and load that into their system, and then the library will then go into the knowledge base and start selecting what package they purchased. That does work very well, but there are inevitable problems with that. One is that those packages are all kind of one size fits all, so just because what a librarian purchased, yes, it's that package, but sometimes there might be some slight nuances, such as grandfathered content is a perfect example. So there might be just occasional differences. So those package files don't get institution specific. The other part of that is from the librarian standpoint, you're going in and selecting a file for what you purchased. You've bought content from a lot of publishers. So that's a lot of work. And it's a lot of work to continue to maintain that, make sure you're choosing the correct package. So with automation, there's just kind of a one-time setup. And then the content that goes from the publisher, the KBART files, is institution-specific. So you would, if the publisher has set this up with the knowledge bases, you would just kind of go in and say, okay, I want to do automation. And you do a one-time setup with the publisher and the knowledge base. And then from there, it just goes forward and it gives very specific granular content on that institutional level.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So KBART includes a set of defined fields, ISSN or identifier for serials, ISBN for books, dates, et cetera. But what if a library or provider want to receive or send data that's not defined in the recommended practice? Can that be done in KBART, and if so, how?
It can.
It's Noah's question, Andre, please.
Oh, sorry. I got confused.
You know, if you're very excited for the question, though, I don't want to get in the way of your enthusiasm. I want to take you like your favorite question, you know.
No. This is a really dry one, actually.
But I think it's kind of exciting that it's extensible, right? So...
Yeah.
Noah, how can it be done?
So this is, as Andre already pointed out, so it's effectively a tabbed limited file, which is when you open it, opens in a spreadsheet. So, you know, it's effectively, I think most users use Excel, so often you'll just see this in an Excel sheet. What you can do is at the very end of that file, you can actually add a column. And so there's, I believe there's currently 25 or 26 fields that are predefined in the KBART practice. But within the practice, it does actually allow an extra field at the end where you can then add extra information. So for example, I know some folks want to send media information, which is not presently allowed under KBART phase two, or rather it's not allowed so much as that there's no recommended practice for that. So folks might put that into might append that at the very end of the file as one example. But you can, it is very free to add things at the end, and that is in the actual practice to do that.
Cool.
Andre, did you have anything you wanted to add?
The only thing I would add is actually I would sort of quote you and quote Nettie. I mean, one thing that Nettie often, or I remember hearing her say, is that KBART is one of NISO's most successful recommended practices, or at least widely adopted. So We're not going to necessarily talk about it on this call today, but a lot, even though we're describing what KBART's used for, it's used for a lot of other things, like librarians just love KBART files because it shows them what they bought. Sometimes they're used for electronic resource management systems. So a lot of people in the information supply chain are using KBART because we all love KBART. And that's sort of the reason I think we get this question a lot. Sometimes publishers want to add like a subject at the column and just say what the subject of each journal is or what package it's in or an OCLC number. And, and to quote Noah, KBART's not a bibliographic standard. We don't really want to include all this descriptive information in the KBART file, but the point is you can. And just to conclude with the point is, I think that the reason people want to is because KBART files are so widely used. They just, they want our files to do everything, which is great.
Good. Cool. So, what's going on now? I think this is Andre's turn. So, Andre, what does the KBART Standing Committee do in general? And why were you interested in joining you joined a couple of years ago, I think?
Well, in general, the Standing Committee, as I understand it, really exists to promote KBART. So we want KBART to have the widest uptake possible. So we do things like conference presentations, webinars, calls like this, KBART open hours, where we had a webinar where people could just call in and ask questions. We also endorse content providers and kind of consult with them, which is basically the content provider will say, will you call us KBART compliant, and we'll take a look at their file, review it, and endorse it if they've got everything right or mostly right. And we'll talk about that more later. And sometimes we answer questions, and then we just keep an eye on the information supply chain, as we like to call it, to see what changes are coming that KBART might need to adapt to. And to be honest, I joined the KBART Standing Committee because I fell in love with KBART automation. I think KBART automation is the holy grail. And even though the KBART Standing Committee isn't directly involved with KBART automation, the idea of it really excites me because I think about all the time that we e-resource librarians are going to save managing our e-resources, and we can devote to other things that are a little bit more challenging and have a little more depth than just selecting holdings and knowledge bases. So that's why I got involved.
Noah, why were you interested in joining KBART when you joined?
So I've been working in the world of metadata for about 20 years, and I think I was saying that in my bio at the beginning. And what I enjoy out of that is kind of the act of creating. So I got my start a long time ago working in trade data for a particular publisher back in 2000, when it was a very new concept building their entire trade data feed structure. And to me, that's where it's fun, the act of looking at an area and kind of creating what people need. And as I moved on in my career, I also started to work with library data. And to me, that world of kind of discovery information, and certainly very much KBART, was an exciting area and kind of continues that for me in terms of what I like to do, which is kind of that creational concept and getting things to work correctly and so on.
Cool. Great. We're very glad that you're both such great co-chairs of the KBART Standing Committee. So thank you for all you do. Noah, what is the Standing Committee currently up to? What's the current activity list?
So these days we're actually very, we're always very active, but these days we're especially active. So right now we're working on phase three, which we'll talk about a little bit more, so I don't want to spoil that. But we're working a lot on phase three, which will be coming out at a future date, which is pretty exciting. So we really have been working a lot on that. And then we still continue a lot of our regular work that we do regularly, whether or not we're rolling out a new phase, such as looking at files that have been sent in for endorsement. Certainly dealing with questions come up. So some of those questions really get us to talk. So, they're really terrific. It's not just us being, you know, pointing at a thing in our documentation saying you have to do this. It's more of a, you know, often there's questions that really get us to have a philosophical debate as to how that should be handled. There's also a chunk of also kind of spreading knowledge and allowing different KBART tools to be out there so that everybody else can create their files and know how to work with this stuff, and making sure that at conferences people know what's happening and you know, because people really do want to know. So there's always that activity of making sure that those kind of training tools are in place and that information is being communicated, whether that's webinars or open hours and talking at conferences and so on.
Anything he missed there?
Not a thing.
Andre?
Not a thing.
Good. Good. So you get to talk a little bit about phase three. Phase three for KBART started earlier this year, and I know the group's been really busy. Can you describe the need for phase three, and can you outline what kinds of things the standing committee is planning?
Sure, and I'll leave time for Noah to weigh in on this as well, of course, because it's a big topic. Basically, you know, at the time I joined the standing committee, there was talk about some of the things that had changed out there in the library and publisher world that were needed to be addressed. And like, did we try to, you know, just clarify phase two, or were we ready for a new phase of KBART? And some of those things were really basic, just kind of years of questions that we got from people, made us realize that certain things in the current recommended practice phase two just needed to be a little more clear, maybe some more examples and things like that. So in phase three, some things won't change, they'll stay the same, but hopefully we can maybe explain them better, give examples and clarify. We also noted that there's a lot of changes in the information landscape. So as I mentioned before, KBART only deals with journals and books, and that seems almost simple now in a world where we're getting so much more content for sale and that we want to display through our library systems, everything from different types of textual content like blogs, transcripts, manuscripts, like think of all the primary source databases that are available now, data sets, but also like lots of non-textual stuff like audio and video and images. And KBART just doesn't handle that. And if KBART's going to remain relevant, we need to find some way to incorporate that or communicate it. On a similar vein, there's also a lot more global content, content even from that's not in Latin characters, for example, and we need to better be able to communicate that as well. I'm going to let Noah talk about content sold at a granular level and new technologies, but I'll just outline a couple things we're looking at, and then we can go into more detail if there's questions. So as I mentioned, we're going to clarify the current recommendations, just make them clearer with more examples. We currently have an endorsement process, which we'll talk more about in a minute or two, but we want to improve the endorsement process, maybe make it a little more flexible. We want to look at new fields in the KBART files, which, as I mentioned, could deal with different types of textual information as well as non-textual. As there's more and more KBART files, like any given publisher just produces a lot of KBART files because they have all the different packages, we want to create some kind of file guide or manifest that just makes it easier to communicate, like, all right, here's all of our KBART files and here's what's in them, so you don't have to figure it out. And then we're looking, I'll let Noah talk about this and as well as fill in some of the things I've said. Different file formats and article chapter level data are issues that we're trying to grapple with. Just looking at the mission of KBART and making sure that we know as a standing committee creating phase three, how KBART's used, and that we're taking all of that into account as we update it.
Thank you. So to jump in there, pretty much before I go into chapter level and file types, you know, so KBART itself it was first rolled out. Phase one was rolled out, I believe, in 2010, if I'm remembering right. And of course, you know, things don't just roll out overnight. So those conversations started, you know, probably around 2009 or so. Phase two, which then incorporated consortia content and also monographs. That was in 2014. And then just, I'd say, I think it was last year, we then put out the recommended practice for KBART automation, which was the automation working group. So the reason why I'm noting that timeline is what that means is that the landscape has changed over the years, as well it should. And of course, KBART itself, we found was really, it's been used by a lot of people for a lot of different things, which Andre was talking about just before. So I know, for example, with publishers, they might use it for just even checking what's in their own packages. I've seen sales folks using that, librarians who want to see what they purchased and so on. But the landscape itself has changed and the usage has grown. And as a side result, we want to make sure that KBART is still what we do reflects how it's being used. And a lot of that is also with KBART automation, also making sure that we meet the needs of that. So there was a KBART automation working group that had put out those practices. And a number of us on the standing committee were also on that working group as well. So there was good crossover. But, you know, moving forward, there's various needs that that has and has also increased the usage of KBART. So one of the things that we've been looking at is how, so right now KBART only shows title and journal level info. And it's really a question of like, well, what if a publisher wants to sell article or chapter level info? What if these packages has, you know, a bunch of random articles from different journals or random chapters from different books? How do we communicate that? And that question also came up in the automation working group as well. And the other part of that is file types as well. And a lot of this is supporting automation. So right now, although the KBART files work excellently, and we have no intent of replacing that, but what if we had additional options such as XML, for example, you know, and because that would allow things like, for example, if you have you're offering a book in a package, so you have an online version, there could be 7 different print versions that's associated with that. Spreadsheet info doesn't communicate that very well, but something like XML does. So those are kind of the things we want to look at is how to support KBART moving in the future. And really what Andre said as well is, you know, making sure that we're still meeting those needs as its usage has been so widely adopted.
Cool. Anything else you want to say about phase 3, either of you?
We can just take questions later if people have them, I think.
Yeah, okay. So just to wind up, adopting KBART for librarians and publishers, how should a librarian talk to a publisher about using KBART? If a publisher isn't yet using KBART, how can a librarian strategize about moving them in that direction? I guess that's probably an Andre question.
Yeah, we can switch. These. well, whenever I meet with a customer representative from a publisher, I do bring up KBART. I mean, partly because I'm on the standing committee and it's my little role, but I did even before because it's just important to me as a librarian to have KBART, but it also helps the publishers as well. And the sales reps aren't necessarily really, some of them are, but they're not necessarily familiar with KBART and exactly what it does. But if, as a librarian, you say, this is really important to me, they will get the message and relay it to the people who do know what KBART is. And I mean, sort of, there's like the big picture perspective and the selfish librarian perspective. And from the selfish librarian perspective, it just really simplifies e-resource management. I mean, if there's good KBART data available, especially if there's KBART automation, it just takes me way less time to manage the content that we've purchased. And therefore, I've just got like a much more favorable view of the publisher or vendor because like they're easy to work with. And I mean, in a perfect world, we would only buy content based on the actual content and what's in it. But There are certainly content providers I've dealt with, not necessarily with KBART files, where things were so difficult, I just think to myself, if I can avoid ever buying anything from them again, I will. So if you're a publisher or content provider, you don't want librarians thinking or saying that about you. But in the bigger picture, it helps our users in the library. So if we have accurate KBART data, if it's easy to manage, if the knowledge base accurately reflects what we've bought, that means that there's going to be fewer false positives and false negatives in our discovery layers, and our researchers are going to, and students are going to be finding the information easier. They're not going to get frustrated. They're going to just link through right to whatever they're looking for cleanly and easily. And that's going to drive up usage for the publisher or content provider. So their work is going to be used. It's going to be read. And that's ultimately the goal of the publisher. And because the librarian knows it's used and read and everyone's using it based on usage statistics or other metrics that we use, then we're more likely to renew or buy additional content from that publisher. So I think just like letting the content providers know that it really makes our life easier. It's not some abstract thing. It like has day-to-day implications for libraries and our users.
Cool.
Yeah. And
Noah, anything to add there?
From the publisher standpoint, you know, the thing to, you like to think that a publisher is able to do anything they want. But the truth is as the person who was that technical data guy, who all the sales reps would go to me and, you know, like our customers say, we need this. You know, the truth is that within my own organization, any publisher I've worked at, I have to argue for resources. And sometimes, you know, people within my company are not necessarily feel that that's the most important thing. There's only so many things a publisher can work on at any given moment, and they have their own budgets and needs in terms of where they put their resources. So usage is very important. I personally, you know, I'm always telling publishers they need to do KBART and why it's important. And, you know, that's one of the main things is what Andre was just kind of stressing is it, you know, it's not just about how it makes your life easier. It's also about like, hey, you know, there's a financial aspect as a librarian. If you purchase content and then can't access it, you know, chances are you're not going to buy that content again, or at least you'll certainly think twice about it. So you know, you definitely want to stress to the publisher why this is important, how it's impacting their bottom line, because you'll certainly have advocates there for what you need, but that gives them ammunition to then argue like, yeah, we do need this. This isn't just something that sounds nice.
Cool. So then if a publisher does say, all right, we're going to do this, what does a publisher need to do to endorse KBART? What's the process for them?
So for them, the first thing you can do is you go to our website up on NISO, and you'll find plenty of material there, such as the recommended practice and how to start creating your files. And there's a lot of info there.
If you just Google NISO KBART, you'll get
yes.
to it first thing.
Yeah, no, that's important. Thank you. So that's going to hit like right towards the top of your results. So the first thing you want to do is you want to look at that and create your files around those practices. That's you know, I at a publisher, I created a KBAR process there years before I was a member of the standing committee. So this is the exact thing I did is build that out. You start to create those. You can, it's very important once you actually create the files to make them publicly available. And also you can register your organization with the KBAR. We have a KBAR registry, so that way we can list that. And then for endorsement itself, it's actually fairly easy. We have an email address. You can email KBAR at NISO.org. And then what we'll do is on our end, we receive those files And we then review them and get back to you in terms of what is needed. Or we tell you it's awesome, but you know, usually it takes a pass or two, as with anything in life. So, you know, and we'll tell you what might be needed and what's missing. I personally have found that incredibly useful just with any recommended practice or standard, is finding areas that perhaps I missed, even to get that ready. And then once you are actually endorsed, you'll get a letter of endorsement for us. We put your KBART logo next to your name on our registry. And we also do send out from time to time a press release in terms of anybody who has been received a recent endorsement over the last few months.
Cool. Andre, anything you want to add?
Nothing to add.
All right. So that's the end of our questions, our little Q&A. I'd like to see if anyone in the audience has anything they want to ask Andre or Noah about KBART. The floor is yours. There's no questions. That's okay too. But
I can always come up with a question.
Cool.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Linda Wobey at Skelk. And
oh, hey, Linda.
Couple of NYSO committees here and there. So I had a question about KBART automation. Is that, I mean, how widely adopted is that right now? How many publishers and knowledge bases have adopted that?
That's funny you should ask that, because one of our little mini projects right now on the standing committee is to try to answer that question and think about putting on the registry whether or not a vendor supports KBART automation. But one of the things is it has to be, like, unlike just creating KBART files where content provider can create them, with automation it really has to be teamwork between the content provider and the knowledge base supplier, and often there's a lot of back and forth because there's programming involved. So I think you're correct that the uptake is relatively small, like it's a handful at this point.
I rolled out KBART automation at Springer Nature. I think that was, I think it was a year and a half ago. I was going to say a year ago, but time is moving. And I know Elsevier was doing it as well, and a handful of others. And kind of like Andre said, it's something where you certainly have to work hands-on with the different knowledge bases, and with your tech team to get that set up. I think it's incredibly worthwhile. That's my personal opinion.
I just wait for new announcements. I mean, we're my library is on Alma, and I think we have it set up in Alma with Elsevier, Springer, and Ovid. And apparently Wiley is like in the works, and I'm just waiting for Wiley and then others. OCLC, I know, has automated holdings with more than that, but sometimes it's not actually KBART automation. Like they have other back channel ways that aren't technically KBART automation. And then unfortunately, I'm not really familiar with EBSCO's discovery and knowledge base and who they have it set up with. But I think unfortunately, it's just like some of the bigger publishers now. I think it'll probably be years before it's really widely adopted, but I think it's like just the only way to go. So hopefully that will happen.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Thanks, Linda.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if there's no other questions, I'm going to stop the recording. If there's a question someone wanted to ask that you didn't want it recorded, that will be an opportunity. So let me just do that.